Please note that World HD posts on social media may include statements concerning financial market trends and are based on current market conditions, which will fluctuate and may be superseded by subsequent market event. The investment strategies and broad themes discussed in World HD live streams, recordings, and social media posts may be unsuitable for certain investors depending on their specific investment objectives and financial situation. Information and data contained in posts and on live streams have been obtained from sources believed and checked to be reliable, but not guaranteed. You should note that the materials on the social media platforms are provided as is without any express or implied warranties. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. All investments involve a degree of risk, including the risk of loss. Any comments made in the materials are opinions with no guarantee that any expressed course of events will actually transpire, and no compensation has been paid to any person providing a testimonial or comments.
Coming at you live from America on Rumble X and LFA TV. This is World HD every weekday at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. Today is Tuesday, August 12th, 2025. Good morning, Frankie, and good morning to all of our viewers and friends out there.
Great to be here, Craig. Let's get after it. We got a lively chat this morning. Let's go. Jay White, W. Wilson, Rachel Hawk, Geo Rich, our fearless leader, the hip-hop patriot, Rachel Hawk. Let's go.
Good morning. Good morning. All right, so today is Debt Market Tuesday, and we like to look at debt markets, talk about that a little bit. So we'll take a look at the 10-year note today, because that's kind of the benchmark, the biggest debt market in the world. So we'll take a look at that. And why do we want to do that today? Well, today we have the CPI data, so the Consumer Price Index data. And so the headline of the show is Trump versus all the experts, and that's really what it's been. He's been saying that these tariffs, all the actions on these tariffs is actually not going to be inflationary, right? Not only that, he came into office with huge amount of inflation, right, from the Biden administration. He left the Biden administration I think he almost had like a zero print on inflation. Biden comes in, gets out of control, inflation totally spirals out of control. President Trump comes back in, he tries to instill tariffs, and everybody says he's going to be the one that creates the inflation. And it's actually the opposite, right? So far, he's been right, okay? So is that going to continue forever? We don't know, but we've got, you know, there's a lot of talk. Again, people don't quit. You know, the analysts, the professional analysts, if anybody's been watching, you know, the financial news, they never stop. It's one after another coming in and saying stagflation, which is stagnant growth with inflationary situation. And so what does that mean, right? This enters into the equation, the central banks, the Federal Reserve, right? The reason we pay attention to the CPI data is to figure out what is the central bank going to do next, okay? And are they going to cut rates? President Trump's been putting pressure on the Federal Reserve to cut rates. So he's clearly out front of all these people, all right? And it's amazing, you know, where he gets his information. You know, what did he say yesterday, Frankie? He had a quote yesterday where he said, Hegseth was standing behind him. I thought this was classic, right? Hegseth is standing behind him, and he says, we're going to be going to Alaska to talk with Russia, and I'm going to have it all loaded right up in here. So basically, you know, like arming up, you know, getting it all straight up here. And Hegseth was behind him, and he just laughed. I mean, he thought it was hilarious, you know. So I thought that was a classic. I was thinking of trying to dig that thing out, but it was in the middle of a long, you know, long clip of him, you know, yesterday talking about the, you know, when they had the long press conference about trying to clean up DC, right? And bringing in all the different entities of the government to clean up DC. So anyway, I thought that was a classic. If you didn't see it, you know, maybe we'll pull it out at some point, because I thought it was great. Anyway, that's the point, right? Is, you know, where does he get this information? How does he stay out front of this? And, you know, we try to do it too, you know, and this is kind of what I do in a sense as well. You know, you're always looking at what the financial, you know, press and media is putting out there, and then you're saying, I don't buy that, you know. So I guess in a sense that's what we're all doing. It's just we get bombarded with this mainstream media, right, and the nonstop barrage of just constantly brainwashing, and it's almost hard to believe sometimes how bad it really is, you know, until you just really take a step back for a second, and, you know, and it's helpful to have, you know, a true champion like President Trump out there fighting against these people. You know, again, we don't know what the outcome on all this is going to be, because we still have a ton of debt. You know, there's a lot of bad things, you know, still to be worked through. But that being said, you know, he continues to battle all the pros, right? The analysts that are out there, and it's nonstop. I mean, you can watch it. It just never ends. So that's the thing, right? Today we have the CPI data is going to come out. It's going to be, what are they going to look at, right? We're going to set this up just a little bit. We'll look at the economic data here. But what we really want to set up is you've got services inflation and goods inflation, okay? And we talk about three different types of inflation, right? Asset inflation, demand inflation, currency inflation. But inside there, you know, you can kind of boil down this goods and services. And so what does the U.S. provide mostly? Services, right? We've had our manufacturing core ripped out from underneath us over the last 30 to 40 years. Right on this whole, you know, globalization, moving all this production to China. And as we do that, we became more of a services country. Well, think about this, right? What's the easiest thing for AI to replace? Probably the services side of things, right? You know, more of the decision, middle level management. So really, that's the, I think that the middle level management, right? The people who have degrees, but not really, you know, not, they haven't quite, how do I put this, Frankie? They haven't quite climbed the ladder, you know, to the point where they're not untouchable. You know, they haven't played the game, you know, the political game. And so they're kind of stuck in that middle, just doing their job, you know, managing people, making sure that, you know, the quotas get met, sales get met, or, you know, expenses get met, or production and all these different things get met. But think about AI, right? It's probably going to eat that stuff alive. So that's the real susceptible core of our country. Now, if all the manufacturing's over in China, we've got some problems, right? Because now that we could get hollowed out pretty quickly. So again, you want to win the AI race, right? Because there's no choice. But then the other side of it too is you got to try to bring back the manufacturing so you're not so hollowed out. So it's sort of a reinvention of America, you know, Trump 2.0 America. You know, can we save America? Can we reestablish it as the preeminent leader? And so, but isn't that kind of interesting, Frankie, when you think about this, goods and services? And that's what I think is going to be the big takeaway today is they're going to, the goods might see inflation, but the services won't, and it's sort of masking the two. And that's where the analysts actually do have a good point. That makes sense, Frankie?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I genuinely can't even imagine how, you know, we already have this problem of, oh, look at all these people that are going to college and spending so much money and going into debt, and they can't get a job now. Just imagine 5 years to a decade with AI. It's going to be insane, especially with all these computer jobs, all the economic stuff. What was that?
Well, the funny thing is that they'll say, yeah, I'm not into politics. You know, I don't get into politics. It's like, well, better wake up because, you know, that's the whole goal, right? You need to vote, right? You know, again, vote there brings up a whole other issue. Voting, right? Is voting. But you know what I mean? Whether you vote or not, you still need to express yourself, you know, whether it's to your neighbor, to someone else, you have to say, like, have these discussions, right? So does that make sense? I don't know. I just, you know, we have a rigged vote, so you feel like you can't vote, you know. It is a bad deal,
it's
right?
It's a conundrum, we have a bad, Craig.
It is a conundrum. Oh, man, it drive you crazy. All right, well, let's try to not, let me pull this back down. I moved some things around yesterday doing some work. Let me slide this.
Oh,
hopefully I don't have an explosion.
China
here.
Is fighting deflation, but they're probably going to have to print. Probably. You know, I was thinking about Janet Yellen must be having the best, just the best, you know, retirement right now because no one's talking about her. It's still like, oh, look at this guy. He's going to ruin it all. She's like, oh, wow, look at me. I just got through 4 years. No one had any idea. That was a mess. Sips vodka.
All right. I think we're ready. Okay. A little bit of a delay there. All right. Let me see if I can get this over here. All right. Economic data. Okay. All right. Having a little bit of problems with that. Okay. So the economic data for this week, the big takeaway is CPI. Okay, that's a big one for this week. And then we get the PPI, Consumer Price Index today on Tuesday. We skip a day. Then we get the Producer Price Index on Thursday. Those are going to be dissected nonstop this week. And then we finish off Friday with core retail sales. That's going to be a big one. We also get the Empire State Manufacturing on Friday. University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment. We kind of beat that one down again yesterday as much as we can. And then what we'll do is we'll take a look at, this is kind of funny, Frankie. Yesterday, you know, I wanted to track this China data. And it was on Forex Factory. And then today it's gone. Like it just disappeared.
Stop.
Like they didn't even have. Yeah, it's just gone, right? It's gone. So I had to go hunting down. So let me show you this, right? So we've got this economic data. Well, let's go back. Yeah, this is it, right? So China new loans. It was on Forex Factory, not there today, okay? China M2 money supply. It was on Forex Factory yesterday, not there today. So again, maybe it's a Forex Factory issue, but I just find it funny, right? It's like, you got to go hunting this stuff down. It's always the case. So I didn't hunt down the China M2 money supply because I don't think anybody really cares too much about that. All we want to do is talk about the velocity of money, right? Money supply in the system. How much is China pumping out into the system? And how much is the money moving around? How comfortable are people moving money around? And we don't live in China, so we don't get that feel. So all we can do, if we're trying to put ourselves in that spot of the Chinese, we're trying to figure out where they're at, all we can do is take in different things and imagine what they're going through. And again, even though we don't know their culture, it's hard to put ourselves in their shoes, I guess is my point. I watch closely to see what the feedback is. And yesterday, you know, there was an analyst in China saying, you know, really the last year or two has been pretty good for the consumer, but it's starting to trickle off again. So that wouldn't have been my read on things. I would have said it would have probably been rough on the consumer in China for the last couple of years based on the data that I've been seeing. So that one, again, the takeaway is it's hard to put ourselves in the shoes of what's going on in other countries. That's what we try to do anyway, okay? Even though, I guess what I'm trying to say is if that guy's right, then I was unsuccessful in interpreting what was coming through for the last year and a half. You know, that doesn't mean we stop, right? We continue trying to figure out what's going on and how the consumer is feeling, right? So is money moving around, right? And that's really what this M2 money supply is. Okay, so the China new loans, it was expected at $360 billion. It came in at $313 billion. I'm not sure that that's a negative. Again, I had to do the conversion because, again, they hide the stuff. You know, you get it in yuan or renminbi, then you got to do the conversion back to dollars. And, you know, you're like, is that – so, again, you know, there's some other factors in there. So I would just – it's nice when you get someone doing the data and you can just go off that data. At least you have reference points, right? This, I'm pulling data from, you know, here was the expected number, and now I'm having to pull data in from somewhere else, and you're like, did they have the same expected number? So again, it just makes things murky, right, when the data isn't clean. And that's the takeaway, is we're going to get into that today too with the BLS, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and President Trump bringing on a new guy, fiery guy. Some of you may have seen him, E.J. Antoni. Does that name strike a bell with you at all, Frankie?
No.
You haven't seen him? Yeah, so he's a character. He kind of reminds me of Stephen Miller. He's a lot like a Stephen Miller. You know, Stephen Miller's kind of got that, you know, little kind of a small wrecking ball kind of an attitude.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
E.J. Antoni's a lot like that, right? But on the economic side of things. So again, President Trump has a fireball in there. And so we'll get to that in a second. All right. So data. All right. We get the Italian trade balance came in a little bit lower than expected, right? It was expected at 7.1, 5.41. Again, no big breaks in anything, just a slight downtrend in that. Is Cleveland, again, yesterday's a nothing on the data. I'm just kind of going through this stuff really for a couple points. The money supply in China and Japan, the Cleveland Fed expectations, right? You know, they're calling for, you know, inflation expected at 3.9. They're calling for it to be down to 3.5%. It doesn't really, that's going to get washed completely away today with the CPI data. Well, that won't matter one bit, you know, unless it happens to corroborate it. If it corroborates it, then fine, it kind of goes in the flow, but it's not a big data point. It's just something to think about, right? And something I'm thinking about, right, as I'm watching this stuff, because here's the problem. You get this narrative and you're like, okay, let's take a step back from the narrative. Let's go back and look at the Cleveland Fed. Let's look at these other data points and kind of get a feel for what's going on. And see if there, before it all gets aggregated into one output, right, the financial media news, right, I just try to take a step back from that. So again, what does that mean? It means if I were to do a takeaway from that, President Trump continues to be right that inflation is coming down, okay, and that these tariffs aren't having the impact. Again, in some place like the central, you know, middle of America, Cleveland, okay, that would be the reason I bring that up, right, just to give you a little background on it. What's going on in the manufacturing base in Cleveland? How are they thinking about things in terms of inflation? And is President Trump right? And this could be an indicator of that. Okay, so again, I throw those out there. Got to give you a little bit of background on them or it makes no sense. Okay, so Japan money supply up a little bit. So that's good. Again, we continue to watch Japan. We continue to watch Europe, continue to watch China for these big outside external influences. It can have an impact on our world, our markets, our financial system, our economics. Okay, and then I'll skip the NAB business confidence because it didn't, again, we were only watching that to see if there was a big surprise there. All right, so today, big data points. Australia had a rate announcement. Their central bank, Royal Bank of Australia, had a rate announcement last night, kept rates at 3.6%. And again, fairly major economy, one of the major currencies out there in the world. Why are they big? Mostly commodities into China, commodities around the world. So they are a factor. Right now they're sitting pat. Okay, no change there. We get some bad data coming out of this Europe. Not surprising. Okay, German zoo economic sentiment expected at 39.5. Pretty big miss, 34.7. So that's significant. Zoo economic sentiment. This is just for the EU in general. 28.1, 25.1. Again, another fairly significant miss. Europe. Right. Weakness, continued weakness, even though occasionally we get a decent data point or something like that. I just continue to feel right again, trying to put myself in the shoes of Europe, hoping to not get it wrong, like I apparently did with China. You know, what's going on in Europe? How are they feeling? Right. When they're seeing these sentiment readings, these economic sentiment readings, how is it feeling for the Europeans? OK. And what are they doing? Why? Are they going to be spending? Is their money moving? Right. Do people feel confident spending and buying and so forth? That's kind of the takeaway there. And again, that's what we're doing here with the consumer price index too, right? Today we're going to get this consumer price index data at 8:30. And that's what we're looking for, right? How are people, again, if they sense inflation, is that going to be positive or negative, right? Well, probably, again, some of these things are temporarily negative, but then longer term positive, or temporarily positive and then longer term negative. You know, it's a knee-jerk reaction. So for instance, if we get a really weak read today, what is that going to do? It's probably going to allow the Federal Reserve to back off and say, whoa, 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 we're getting weakness on the job side. Okay, we're starting to get some weakness, but we don't have it on the inflation side. And again, what's their dual mandate? Maximum employment, price stability in terms of goods and services and so forth for the U.S. All right, and then we get a couple more speakers out today, and the only reason that matters is because the Fed's been front and center for President Trump, picking on Jerome Powell, Kugler out. Now we have his head economist in, Stephen Moran. He's now in as another Fed board member, so it's clearly a three vote now. Three dissenters clearly is what they're going to get in September. If the Fed doesn't cut rates in September, they're clearly going to have three dissenters. We talked about this. They hadn't had two dissenters since the 1990s. Last meeting, they had two dissenters, so now they're going to have three. So you can just feel the pressure building. And I think if they really wanted to oust Jerome Powell, Frankie, I think they could do it. I don't think they really want to do it. I think it's more about drawing attention and this constant pressure on the apparatus. More than it is the individual, it's more about the apparatus. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, well, I've kind of had that question. It's like all we do is complain about Powell, but it's like, is it really him or is it that position and what it stands for? And it really doesn't matter who's in it. You know what I mean? If we swap him out, does it really matter, or is it just at the right time of when they want it to happen? Right? You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think the things have been coordinated. If you watch what's going on with the tariffs, it looks like chaos, but then all of a sudden the dust seems to settle and you're like, okay, I see what they were doing over in Asia. I see what they're doing. They're applying pressure to Europe. Okay, they're holding off on China. Why are they doing that? They're holding off on Canada. Why are they doing that? We continue to see Canadian data weaken last week. If you remember, we had that jobs report we talked about, absolutely got crushed. So that doesn't put Carney in a good spot. So again, time is not on Carney's side, okay? It's on President Trump's side. It's on our side as the U.S., to sit there and wait for Canada to come to the table, right? To get the things that we need, right, from Canada, our neighbor, to make the relationship healthy, okay? And again, you can't leave out the globalist influence on this, right? If there was no globalist influence in Canada, right, with Justin Trudeau and Mark Carney, and this continued perpetuation, you could just say, hey, look, let's just sit down and work this thing out. But there's that external injection, right, that's constantly coming in, this injection of, you know, these globalist elites that are constantly exerting their will through these entities that they can control. So if it was just neighbor to neighbor, it would be a lot easier, right, Frankie? But the problem is you can't forget that, right? We can't forget the injection of this World Economic Forum, this world, and they'll rename themselves, right? You know, Klaus Schwab's out, someone else is in, World Economic Forum. They'll rename themselves and they'll just come back as a Trilateral Commission 2.0 or the Bilderberg or the, you know, you just name it, right? It doesn't matter. But that pressure is always being exerted, and that's what makes these trade negotiations complicated. That's why I think you have to let time go by and wear them down. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That makes sense, Frankie. I think. Okay. And the other thing too is Mexico, right? Klaus Sheinbaum, okay, the leader of Mexico, they're kind of sitting on hold down there and waiting. So again, we see certain tariffs being put in place, certain ones not, and you have to think that there's a pattern, a process here that's involved in this whole thing. And that's what we're hoping for. Again, with the inflation, with the, there's a lot of things moving, a lot of moving parts, right? We could, you know, every day we can't cover it all in here. You know, we do our best to cover it, but nonetheless, there's a lot of moving parts, but we just continue to chisel away. And I think we're getting most of it, I think, Frankie. I think we're getting, like, I think we cover 80% of the head topic. Because, again, we focus on that currency on Monday, debt on Tuesday, energy on Wednesday, stocks on Thursday, and commodities. We try to, although that always gets neglected. You know, it's always the one that gets kind of gets robbed on Fridays, you know, just because we have cleanup to play. And, you know, but I do want to look at the soybean chart today just because it's been in the news with China and so forth. So, all right, I think we're, stage is set. I think we're in good shape for the data out at 8:30. And that's the CPI data. Again, consumer price up the stream is going to be producer price. That's the one we're going to get on Thursday. We're going to be watching for that. So again, this is just the first in the series of the two. I actually wish they'd flip the two around and do producer price first and then consumer price, be more valuable, but it is what it is. We don't control that. Okay. All right. So let's go ahead and run a couple clips here, Frankie. I want to run this stuff here with, this is a composite of, again, these talking heads. Okay. All the top strategists.
Oh, never mind. We had a little glitch on Rumble, but we're back. All good. Not us.
Okay, good. All right. So let's go ahead and run this clip. This is a composite of all the talking heads, you know, and where they are. And I think the theme you'll take away is that that the Fed is moving toward President Trump, which is a series of rate cuts, probably starting in September or therefore, and probably four in a row. We talked about this. The Fed doesn't usually move like one and done. It's usually they start and then they move. They try to go in a direction. So this, I think the takeaway here on this composite is that the President Trump is having the influence on the all the Wall Street apparatus and the Federal Reserve.
Clearly, there has been an uncertainty impacting the economy.
The macro data has been quite resilient.
The quality of the data has deteriorated.
I'm worried that we're going to be in a sort of stagflationary environment.
What we do need to be prepared for is more volatility in the data.
What matters is what's going on in the rest of the inflation basket.
It's a risk, and it can certainly complicate things for the Fed.
If we get enough pain, enough suffering, I think the Fed will have no choice but to react.
The Fed is in the risk management game.
The direction of travel is very clear. Rates are coming down.
That Fed put is maybe not as secure as people think.
It's attractive to still be invested in fixed income.
We don't see the same role for bonds as diversifiers.
Yields could stay elevated for a little bit.
It makes me cautious, I think, on longer term treasuries.
Where this lands is still uncertain.
Okay, so I think the consensus is coming around that Powell is late, just like President Trump said, too late Jerome, too late Powell, whatever he's called him, okay? And this is what's interesting. Between now and the next rate cut potential in September, there's going to be two CPI data points, this one and then another one next month before they meet again, okay? So that's what makes this one a little bit longer. And here we have this, I like this analyst, you know, this guy's pretty good. His name's George Catrimbone, and he's at DWS, really good trading firm, and also pretty heavy in the fixed income side, the debt market side. And here he is talking about job outlook after the revisions. It's this revision data that we're going to talk about too with this new appointee, EJ Antoni.
The economy that the Fed thought they were looking at on Wednesday in their meeting was very different at Friday. And then if you look at it, 14,000 ads in June, 19,000 ads in May, and that strength came from healthcare. And I don't think it's a healthy segment if you actually want to grow the economy. And if you back that out, it's actually a negative print. So well said, we're going to now look immediately at inflation. That's why the market is kind of going sideways in between. And the Fed is going to have to decide which side of the mandate is more important right now. And if labor is actually weakening and the three-month trend line's around 35,000 jobs, what do you do if inflation actually starts reaccelerating because of tariffs? You've seen it in toys. You've seen it in furniture. You've seen it in bananas. And that's on the good side, right? But services has actually been coming down, and shelter's been a large component of that. And I think that's why Powell had sort of a tough press conference trying to balance both sides.
So even though a pretty good analysis there, Frankie, I think you know, you can still tell this, he still wants to stick with all his crowd, right? He still wants to jump in with the sheep, his crowd, all the Wall Street analysts, and say, Yeah, but inflation, we still don't know the impacts of inflation yet, okay? And again, everybody's hedging against that because they just can't understand how you can raise tariffs like this and not have inflation trickle through. And at some point, someone is going to eat the cost. The question is it the countries that are shipping into the U.S.? Everybody wants access to this U.S. market, right? You know, it doesn't matter where you go. President Trump, that's another thing that he's called out that I don't think gets enough credit, is that, you know, how much these other countries want access to the U.S. consumption engine, okay? And that's really, I think he saw through it, and he knows that that's the case, and he's really levering that to the maximum. I really, as I look back and I watch what's going on, he's really pushing that hard. And again, Brazil's scrambling right now. For instance, you know, we know that they're using tariffs down there for political reasons. It's pretty clear, right? I mean, we could say it's this or that or whatever, but it's really political issues, right? It's Lula da Silva's, you know, stole the election or was part of the stealing of the election, and Bolsonaro didn't get a fair shake, and President Trump's exerting pressure down there. And so we know that that's the case. But again, Brazil is scrambling because they want access to this U.S. market, right? So again, President Trump knows how to lever the heck out of this thing, right? And that is the people, the consumption engine of America. All right. So here's this Catrimbone again talking about possibly already being behind the curve. This is exactly what President Trump said. Too late, pal.
Funny that you mentioned that 16,000 futures contracts went through for an August Fed cut on Friday. So the market's going to have to start to price this in again. And you had a very similar setup to what you had last year, where they didn't see it as a 50 basis points cut. They saw it as a catch-up cut for what they should have done in July. And if you, like Rob said, if you get one more bad data print, bad labor data print, or more sanguine inflation, call it 0.2, 0.3, the Fed finds themselves very quickly behind the curve and with a very loud administration in the background.
Okay. So pretty self-explanatory. Now this one, we have Mary Daly. She now has the job that Janet Yellen once had before she rose to fame, right, or notoriety, okay, as the head of the Fed and the Secretary of the Treasury. This was a role she had, the San Francisco branch, okay, of the Fed. Mary Daly has that spot now. And here's Mary Daly talking about once jobs start to go, they can really go. And this is the thing that I think is the bug in the ear of the Federal Reserve, that if, again, dual mandate, price stability, jobs, okay? The jobs part is the one that could get out of control on them. That's the only thing President Trump saying, look, I've got the inflation side under control, right? I'm bringing it back down. I'm adding these tariffs. I'm doing my part of it. You knuckleheads are the ones that are going to ruin the jobs market, okay? And here's Mary Daly talking about that.
Labor market has softened. And you can see this everywhere in the U.S. economy. And I would see additional slowing in the labor market as an unwelcome sign, especially since we know, and I think importantly because we know, that once the labor market stumbles, it falls. And it falls quickly, and it falls hard. I think we'll likely need to adjust the policy rate sometime in the coming months.
They got to type, these people, huh?
What's that, Frankie?
They got to type this San Francisco, whatever you call it.
How would you describe that type? Are you gonna go into that or just type it?
Okay. Lesbian. Sorry, Janet.
Well, Janet Yellen's actually married. Janet Yellen's actually married.
So is most of Washington.
Doesn't rule that out. I guess it doesn't rule that out, does it? Is that a cover? That's the question.
I call it a beard. All right. I'm done here.
All right. I love it.
Have it,
stuff. That might be the best. That might be the best insight of the day right there, Frankie. You know? All right. So here's what we have. The U.S. Treasuries. Okay. Now, we have this upward sloping trend channel. All right. As this market moves higher, it means rates are coming down. Okay. So again, think of it inverse, right? As this market goes higher, rates come down. As it goes lower, rates go up. All right, so it's just we have to get that, we have to lay that groundwork out of the. So what are we looking at here? We're looking at a couple things. We got a couple harmonic structures in here that really have not played out yet. We'll look at that here in a second. Really got up to the upside halfway, went down below the breakout zone, back up into the breakout zone, traded around there for a little while, and just wandering. Now, you know, I guess looking back, I'm not surprised. Going into this, I thought we were going to get something big was going to happen. But amazingly, this market is sort of just quieted down. And if you look at this, here was the volatility, right? When this whole thing started, okay, I got that in that purple, the long vertical one there, right? This, we get this big, quick run up and then this quick sell off. And it really alerted markets that we were in for some volatility. Then after that, we go into this gold box, we go sideways, and we drift around a couple things. Okay, we've got this bright green line down here at 109.29. That was a harmonic level for us a while back. A little one, not a big one, but it played a role. Okay, here's the big one, the white dashed line, right? That's an old harmonic structure that's been the line in the sand for us. Okay, so again, that one's at 111.10. We've been talking about that one for, I think, probably since the show started, for sure. And maybe even before that through Market Ultra. But the point is this.
CPI coming in.
When we're in this, the data's coming in. Yeah, all right. All right, let's see. What do we have on this, Frankie? We've got.
Pending for me. 2.7 okay, so on the year.
Yep.
Core CPI month to month, 0.3. Same as forecasted.
All right. Let me pull this up here. We've got this one. There we go. Okay. So we've got the month over month on the CPI, 0.2 versus 0.2 estimate. Okay, so that's good. Like Frankie said, year over year down. Okay, so 2.7 versus 2.8 estimate. Okay, on the year over year. And then we start getting into the weeds, right? We get the X food and energy. All right, so we get 0.3 versus the 0.3 estimate. Year over year, 3.1 versus 3.0. Okay, so again, this is that good side, right? That's actually X food and energy. So that's not food and energy. So actually up, so that must be services, right? So services are up a little bit, which could be concerning. And then we'll just have to watch the rest of this data come through. Again, the headlines are pretty quiet, right? 0.2 versus 0.2 in the year over year, 2.7 versus 2.8. When they're at the White House today and, you know, they've got the talking heads out front of the White House and they're talking, those are the big numbers they're going to talk about, 2.2 versus 0.2 on the month over month and 2.7 versus a 2.8. And then what we have to do is look under the surface and see, like, what are the different components feeding into it? And they're still not coming through except that X food and energy, which doesn't look too far out of line. All right. The only thing is the year over year slightly up, the 3.1 versus 3.0. All right, so we'll see what the fallout is on that. What we'll do is, okay, so here we're getting a little bit more. Looks like something's being updated. Just make sure, the last couple of times we've been kind of bombarded with changes underneath the surface, and I just wanted to see if we can't get a good look at this. So real average hourly earnings, 1.2 versus 1. So earnings are up a little bit. Average weekly earnings, year over year up quite a bit, 1.4 versus 0.7. So again, you know, that's a pretty big number, right? That's a doubling of what was expected or what was the prior number. All right. So average hourly earnings. All right. We'll see if more stuff comes through. I'll try to keep an eye on that as we keep going with this. But I think that's it. Again, no major. Let's see if anything's happened. Let's go look at this bond market here. Let me dive into let this thing fill in here for a second. We'll come back to that bigger picture in a second. I'm not seeing anything major in the bond market, and the 10-year note is going to be quick to make a decision. All right, so you can see it popped a little bit. This is the data coming out. This is the tick chart. So you can see it was kind of drifting lower into the data, and then it was instantaneous move up from like 111.23 to 112.04, which is it's a 10 tick move. Again, nothing major though. And now it's kind of drifting back sideways. We'd have to, you know, here's the real deal on this. Let's figure out what the trend is on this, okay? Because right now it's just noise coming through. This was the harmonic structure that we've had for quite some time, okay? It hasn't played out. You can see we came down here to the downside halfway, right? This dark green line down here. I'm going to put a purple triangle on that. At 109.12, we came exactly down to that. And then we start grinding higher back across this breakout zone multiple times. Now we're back above it. You know, what would have been, how much is this market being influenced by policy? That's the question. And was this market wanting to go lower? And this is how much effort it takes to turn a market like this, right? You have to go after the central bank. You have to go after, all these tariffs and all these things. I mean, it's not easy to turn markets. Was a natural tendency for this market to the downside? I don't know. All I know is this market's struggling very hard to find a direction right now. And it's sort of amazing with everything that's gone on how quiet this market has really been. And I think that's a big takeaway. So looking at this down here, this purple box that I have down toward the bottom at this 109.12, that would be like if I were long this market, that would be my last stop where I'm getting out of everything. You know, if it breaks back below that low in this dark green line, I would say I'm out of this thing. In the meantime, I would be long this thing. Why? You can see the trend changing in the with the Federal Reserve. You can see President Trump having and Scott Bessent and the whole cabinet exerting will across this thing slowly but surely, right? Just constant pressure upon the Federal Reserve and the tariffs and everything that they're doing to try to, they were put in a bad spot, right? By Frankie's buddy, Janet Yellen, right? They were left in a terrible spot, right? Coming in. And so, you know, this is what they're trying to work out of. And this is, I think what we're seeing here is how hard it is to get this thing going in a direction. And the question is, once they get it going in a direction, will it be able to be sustained? That's the other thing. If you don't bring the deficits down and create growth, so two things, growth and some sign of deficits coming down, it's going to be really hard to hold this thing up there. Now, we've got some parts and pieces that are going on. There's some little tricky little things under the surface that are creating demand for this debt market that we'll talk about here in a few minutes. There's some things in the banking side, these SLRs. There's the Genius Act, right, that's going to create demand for this. There's a lot of things creating demand for this situation. So they're trying to create demand so that they can actually hold this market up, which means lower rates, and they can sustain them for a while, okay, for the consumer, all right, to keep this consumption engine going in the U.S. Is that any questions on that, Frankie? Is that pretty clear? So if you're going to – again, I think they're laying the – let me put it this way. They want to have a house, right? They want to build this house, okay, and it means good – a nice home, right? Build it the right way. But you got to put in the foundation, and that's the thing. They're trying to create demand for this situation with putting in the – blocks right now, creating demand for this debt market, because that's why we watch this bid to cover ratio in here. That's why we watch the interest rate yields. That's why we watch this stuff, because there's a sovereign debt crisis looming out there. Something's going to blow up at some point. Okay. The question is, I don't think that the Trump administration wants it to happen here. Okay. And they're trying to do everything they can to make this thing somewhat bomb proof. And they have to create the demand for this. And so they're going to have to create internal demand. And they're going to have to create – and so that's kind of what I think this Genius Act is doing to some extent. I'm trying to give it the benefit of the doubt, because underneath Reagan, right, we started deficit spending. It wasn't the worst thing in the world to deficit spend. It was actually a good move. The problem is, once we did it, it felt so good. And then we never went back and paid it back, right? So it felt so good to do it because we created growth through the 80s and so forth by deficit spending. The problem is it started – leading toward $37.4 trillion in debt, okay? We've never paid it back. So what feels so good gets us through it, but it just pushes the, kicks the can down the road. And that's, I think we're doing it again. The question is that what the Genius Act is going to do? Is just another can to kick things down the road, or is there more to it, okay? And I think there's more to it, but all right, I need to keep moving though. All right, so again, takeaways on this. 109.12, rock bottom spot to get out of these treasuries. That's where I would say if you're long this market, you got to get out there. The pink shaded zone would be another spot to trim some of the position back. In the meantime, I would say this thing is probably going higher, right? The we got this line in the sand, right? And this is an important market. I mean, this is the deepest market, biggest, other than the currency markets, this is the biggest market in the world. So it's worth spending a little time on it because we haven't done it in a while. Then we look at this 111.10, okay, that white dashed line. That's a line in the sand. Gets below there, you got to get concerned. Right. Then you're looking at the pink shaded zone. Then you're looking at that dark green line we were just looking at. In the meantime, what are we looking at for potential upside? It's pretty low risk when you look at this. If you're at the bottom end of this trend channel and you think this thing can move, you can manage risk against these levels. All right. So you're looking at something like, let me just do this in a circle. Wish I had something else. But let's say that's your risk right there, that little yellow circle, and your upside is potentially this if you cross this trend channel. So again, that's what we're looking at. Trying to manage the risk, keep ourselves in a good situation with the idea that this market can move. And I would say that's 3 or 4 to 1, right? You got your risk, you got your reward, 3 or 4 to 1. That's what we're looking for. Okay, longer term, let's take a look at this. You can just to give you a perspective of this debt market. So again, we had this big yellow circle on the left goes all the way back into the 1990s. You can see we were in an upward sloping trend channel the whole time, a nice linear uptrend. And then it started to break down in this area where that purple square is at. Okay, that's where the game started to really change before that. But we got a retest. This was COVID. Okay, we got a retest on COVID. Again, fear all over the world, people piling into the U.S. debt markets. And then that was the beginning of a big slide down in the treasury market. Back to where? To that white dashed line. That's our line in the sand. Okay, so that white dashed line on this chart is the same as the white dashed line on the prior chart. So again, this is just a bigger picture. This is a monthly chart. That other one was a daily chart. And the one before that was a little tick chart, right, where we can measure the harmonics. So what we're doing is just kind of moving through these perspectives, right? Microscopes to telescopes. You know, we're just kind of moving through this stuff, stepping back, stepping in, trying to measure where things are at. And so again, if President Trump was really successful and they got this rate to go up, you're looking at something up in this area, right? Something up in there, but you're going to run into big problems up in there. Can it get up into that area? Can it go sideways? What would that do? It would hopefully alleviate pressure in the housing market. Again, trying to create this consumption, keep this consumption engine going in the U.S. Get lower interest rates, right? Make it easier for people to borrow and get through any of the, you know, debt burdens and so forth they have with school loans, credit card loans, auto loans, home loans, all these different loans that are out there. All right. So I think we've pounded that one in the ground, right, Frankie? Are we good there?
Beautiful.
Okay. All right. So bigger perspective is, you know, debt market moves up, interest rates can go down for a little while, go sideways. That's the best we can hope for. Okay. I don't think we're getting back to the 3% rates again or lower, right? Like we once were. And again, unless we get another, you know, scamdemic or something like that, right? Something like that, something orchestrated. But that's the case, right? A little bit of pressure off in the treasury, in the debt markets, a little bit of lower interest rates, and then hope for sideways. That's looking at the charts. That's the best we can hope for. All right. Let's take a look at these stocks. We haven't looked at that in a while. We looked at that yesterday, but we got to stay on this stuff. So again, we had this retest of the halfway last week. The S&P liked this data this morning, right? It's climbing. It's above the 6.8s, right? That's this light green line. So you can see it right around in here. That's good. Up above the 6.8s. Let's take a look at this NASDAQ. Right, here's the NASDAQ. It's climbing too. It's right back up at its 7.8s, okay? So yesterday, this was the prior high back in here. We got to the 7.8s last week before we got this pullback. 7.8s up in here, okay? And then a pullback down to the halfway, the dark green line again. S&P, NASDAQ both like the halfway, right? They both held there really well. That was not last Friday, but the Friday before. Okay, been climbing back ever since. Now we're back up retesting that 7.8s, these highs. We tested it almost yesterday. Now we're clearly testing it again. NASDAQ, can it make a run to this 24,165? And if it does that mark some kind of a top, okay, in the stocks? Some kind of a swing high, maybe a 5 to 10% correction, maybe a 30 to 50% correction. It all depends on how it trades there, what goes on, what the fallout is from all this stuff. A lot of things to be seen, but I think we should, if we get to that 24,165, that bright green line, we should see some kind of a reaction up in that area. Same thing, we'll be looking at the S&P. Again, I keep pointing out the red flag. The Dow can't break the new high. So those red spots, red flags back here, that was a red flag back at the end of last year. This one right here, what's going on now, that red area, that one is a red flag that it can't move. And the same thing we're seeing with the small caps, okay? The small capitalization stocks aren't moving as well. They're not breaking on a new high. So we've got some red flags here. It's the NASDAQ and the S&P that are running with this thing. All right.
So just real quick, I'll cut in with my Frankie's Journal. I'm looking at this right now. Yeah. And my SPLG, we were dipping, we're coming up. Now I'm up about like a dollar and a half, let's say. So this would probably be a good time to sell one off, right? To keep that.
Yeah. Yeah. So you could do that. So you have two options. So you could either sell one off up in here, right? With the idea that, you know, you'll get a pullback. If you don't have, again, if you don't have very much on, if you're okay. So if you say your maximum position is five and you only have two on, and we're getting late in the game here where you could make a run toward that full upside objective, maybe, you know, yes, selling one is a smart decision, right? Because you're taking profits, bringing down your average price. However, if you think we can get that push up to that level, you might want to wait till you get up there, sell them, you know, as we get closer, right? See what happens today, right? If this market stays above the 7.8s, just all we want to do is ratchet up your stop. Does that make sense? So yeah. We can say, like, if you want to stay a little bit aggressive and you want to keep at, and you want to stay with this with more of a position, maybe think about just ratcheting up your stop tight, giving it room to run, but coming right up behind it with protection. Does that make sense?
Got it.
Rather than just taking the profit, you could just drag your stop up really tight. That way, if it does keep running today, if it doesn't, you get stopped out, but you still get stopped out with a gain on this, on the second one. You're still holding the first one all the way up to that full upside objective. So let me go back to that real fast. Let's talk through this. You can see this S&P is running pretty nicely. This is the one that's going to mimic your SPLG the most. So you're looking at this prior high back in here, okay, these highs. Markets like to go to these highs, but they hate to stick their neck through. Could you see this level today get hit, or sometime in the near future, in the next day or two, 64.95? Probably, that light blue line that I just put the, got so many circles. Let me put this in a rectangle. All right, so let's do this. So let me clear this up for you, Frankie. So what I would say is if you had five on, okay, and you had a maximum position on this pop right here, I would say start selling something. Sell one, get down to four, sell another one, get down to three. As the day gets, as it gets stronger, right? If this market stays strong, start taking some of them off. With the idea that if we get a pullback midday, some announcement comes out, whatever, you're willing to add one back. So now you go from three to four, right? And if it gets really deep pullback, maybe you go to five again. But only because you're buying on weakness and you're ready to sell on strength, okay? Now, if you only have two on and you would love, and you know, your maximum position is five, maybe don't dump that second one yet, right? You're still in an opportunistic mode looking for a dip. You may not get it, right? So hang on to that core position of two. As you get strength, maybe throughout the day, tomorrow, going into the PPI data on Thursday, another big data point, maybe before, you know, if it's up, then you might want to sell it into that data point if it's strong, because a data point could be the thing that causes the correction, right? That allows you to come back in and pick it up cheap. So you're just trying to stay out front of it. You're trying to sell into strength, buy into weakness, right? And sometimes looking at these data points, that's why we go through these data points is, you know, that's why I look at them is, okay, if I have a profit and I'm going into a big data point, I probably should take some off the table, right? I should probably reduce my risk with the idea that if it goes higher, okay, I still have a core position on. If it goes lower, I can then wait till the fallout is done, see if it hits a harmonic level, see if it just starts to bottom out, and then I can be opportunistic and add back. Does that make sense?
Got it. Crystal.
Does that make sense? Any questions, Frankie, on that?
All good.
That's a great question. Right, that's a great question.
And listen, I'll just say to the chat, you know, I am your, you know, your voice. So if you have questions, you're confused, you have any questions with the trading, like ask in the chat, I will relay. Because I'm with you guys. I'm learning too.
All right. Take a look at this. We've got silver, right? We've been watching this one pretty closely. You know, gold's been under pressure the last couple of days, ever since this whole thing happened with Switzerland and the tariffs and 39% tariffs. And then is gold going to be, gold bars, is bullion going to be tariffed, and then no, and there's gets into this complicated thing of rehypothecation. I mean, we don't need to get into all that, but the point is, it's like gold is showing some signs of weakness after that big gap up last week on that data. Again, did Scott Bessent, where they, because here's the thing, Frankie, anytime this happens around 5 to 6 o'clock East Coast time, when the futures markets are closed and then they reopen, like that, to me, that's always a red flag that maybe things are getting manipulated, because Japan's not going yet, Europe's closed, and the U.S. is thin, right? So that's the thinnest time of trade throughout the world. And the futures markets close and then they reopen. So if you're going to play games with markets, that's the time that it happens a lot. Sometimes it's a good opportunity, because you'll see, you know, if you happen to be on the right side of things, you'll get good opportunities to exit some positions. But in this particular case, gold just went through the roof, right? I think we looked at that the other day. Gold just went shooting up. And you know, with that, with, again, tariffs, Switzerland, gold bullion, complicated things that go on in the banking system that aren't really worth digging into, because, but were they playing games? Did Scott Bessent expose something there? Did he expose something with the Federal Reserve, with the banking system that they, you know, did they have short positions on? Did they, were they exposing something? Were they, you got to raise that question. All right. So with that being said, silver just kind of trods along here. It sits at this white dashed line. Again, our line in the sand, same thing we're talking about on the treasury, right? It's kind of this line in the sand for us. So again, as long as silver stays above that white dashed line, it's a spot to manage risk again, or say, okay, I think silver is showing us that it can move higher. Can it get to the 42, 43 level we've been talking about? That's the question. If it stays above that white dashed line, then our life is easy, right? 42, 43 is a target, white dashed line at $37.93, okay, $37.93 an ounce is a spot we're watching, you know, and then our last ditch spot would be if it starts to break below this 34.35. So where we have that big yellow circle across that dark green line, if it starts to break down below there, you have to really start trimming back some of your position. But in the meantime, you know, that we're trying to give you levels to say, okay, white dashed line, our life is easy. Dark green line, we got to start making some decisions and trimming some of the position. Doesn't mean you get out of all of it, but you probably trim back some and say, okay, something's not right here. I got to let this thing work itself out. All right. Okay, so that's silver market, just hanging around the white dashed line, nothing big there. I did want to take a quick look at this. This has been in the news a lot lately with President Trump. Let me see. Dang. Okay, let me go to this. We've got this. This is soybean market, and we probably will come back to this on Friday for commodity day, but this is a soybean market. It's been in a big downtrend for quite some time. Okay, this is a daily chart. President Trump was out talking about this. Let me just put this up here the other day, and let me throw this up here and just so you can see. Okay, so here he is. China's, again, this is part of the whole China trade deal. China's worried about its shortage of soybeans. Our great farmers produce the most robust soybeans. I hope China will quickly quadruple its soybean orders. All right, so why do we go to this? Well, President Trump's talking about it. He loves the farmer. What's he going to try to do? He's going to try to sell goods for, he's a salesman. He's going to sell our products to the rest of the world. So soybeans are pretty depressed, right? This is a great spot to come in. You've got the backing of the man, right? You know, here he is. We see what he can do with the Fed. We see what he can do with tariffs. We see all this stuff. He's probably going to start going to bat for the farmers here soon. Soybeans are on lows. Might be a good time to think about something soybean related, corn related, wheat, maybe not wheat. I don't know if wheat really fits in that category, but he loves corn and soybeans, right? For the farmer, okay? Because that's those are the biggest products of the U.S. agricultural space, okay? So something to think about. We'll come back and talk about that on Friday, but I just wanted to point that out. Soybeans on their lows, President Trump's getting behind them. All right, you can, right? That's pretty... I can't tell you to buy it, but I can say, you know, maybe something, right, Frankie? Because, but, you know, anyway, I think you can. Okay. All right. So let's keep rolling here. I think we're good with the charts. I think that's good for us. All right. Let's go through a few of these headlines, make sure we've got this stuff done. All right. We've got E.G. Antoni to lead the BLS. Okay. So E.G. Antoni, let me show you who this guy is. Here he is out saying, I thought this was a pretty interesting quote. So E.G. Antoni, a fireball, all right? He comes out and these are some of his recent quotes, the BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics data. He says it's just a random number generator, okay? He says data from a magic world of make-believe. Revisions show a negative bias, okay? President Trump's been calling that out, and he totally questions the BLS's methodology. So this is the right kind of guy to get in there. He's definitely smart. He comes from the Heritage Foundation, which is a conservative research think tank, kind of an operation. And you may have seen him out there. He's on Bannon sometimes. He's on Fox quite a bit. He's a pretty approachable guy. I don't think he's, you know, this is going to rise him to fame. But I think he was just kind of a guy, you know, not famous, but, you know, definitely raising red flags all over the place. So good choice by President Trump. If you want action in the Bureau of Labor Statistics, he picked the right guy. Okay, and then let's get back to this. I want to show you a few more things here on the data points or on the headlines. We've got, okay, the Fed list grows. Let's go back to that. Here we've got, so again, confusion, right? More confusion out of President Trump. I think it's intentional. Here are the potential Fed chair contenders. We've known that Kevin Hassett was in the running. We've known Christopher Waller was in the running. And we've known Kevin Warsh was in the running. Now we enter Michelle Bowman, potentially in the running, Philip Jefferson, potentially in the running, and Lori Logan. Okay, now you see most of these people are already in the Fed. Michelle Bowman's already, everybody's in the Fed except for Kevin Warsh. Well, and Kevin Hassett. Kevin Hassett's National Economic Council Advisor, Director. Kevin Warsh is the guy on the outside. He's been vying for a position there for a long time. The question is, how bad does he want the job? How bad is he going to say, yeah, I'll cut rates? I will really cut rates, President Trump. I've got my sword. I'm ready to go. So again, I don't know what this is going to boil down to, what the pick is going to be, but the list is actually broadening out now. So we're adding more confusion to the whole thing, which again, I think draws attention. And I think that's kind of what President Trump wants, is more attention on this, right? The whole apparatus. Okay, let's go back, take a look at this. Fed list grows. Trump team extends the China truce. I think I have another one on this. Okay, let's go back to that. All right, so here we have the tariff collision delayed. Again, Trump extends a truce for 90 days. U.S.-China keeps lower tariffs on goods and tech. Rare earth export chip sales continue. Something to talk about on that. And more talk about Trump eyeing a visit with China sometime in October. So again, there's talks of September in Korea. There's a potential meeting there. And then you have this Oh, there's a meeting, I forget what it is, but there's one in October where it's another good setting for them, where President Xi would be, I think it's a UN Council meeting, I'm pretty sure that's what it is, in October. So could while President Xi's in the U.S. anyway at this meeting, does it, one, make him more willing to go to it, and second, can they pair that up with a meeting at Mar-a-Lago or at the White House with President Xi? I kind of think the Mar-a-Lago is kind of a safer place for him, Frankie. It's not as official. Oval Office is a scary place for someone like President Xi, I think, you know.
Especially with the reporters just spitting. Yeah, Mar-a-Lago 100% has to be.
Yeah. Yeah, more comfortable setting. And the last time President Xi was at Mar-a-Lago, that's when President Trump unleashed like 21 missiles on Syria. Do you remember that?
When they were sitting there at dinner?
Yeah. Okay. All right. All right, here's another quick one. This is kind of important follow-up to yesterday. China urges companies not to use NVIDIA's H20 chips. So again, President Trump went through this yesterday. You know, yes, you can sell them. Only deal is NVIDIA and AMD, we want 15%. So again, kind of a way around the tariffs to make revenue in the meantime until, while they continue to extend this stuff with China, they keep extending the way out the window, another 90 days with China. Again, time's on our side with China, it seems to me. Let them weaken, let them come to the table. The more they're weakened, the more likely they are to strike a better deal. And so this kind of fits in that whole camp. President Trump set this deal up, 15% on the chips going into China. Now China says, we don't want these chips, okay? So I've got this other chart. I just want to show this while I talk through this. All right, so here we've got this thing. Let me just show you this one. All right, so here's where NVIDIA's total sales are. United States is the biggest, Taiwan's probably the second biggest, and then China's third biggest, right? And then 24%, that's everybody else. So again, three-fourths of the market's really between the U.S., Taiwan, and China. All right, so here's the interesting thing is the table seemed to have turned a bit on China, okay, as they were the ones that were thought to be, you know, putting chips in our goods to track us, you know, phones and other things like that, okay? Now, here's the thing. China is now coming back and saying they have concerns about tracking the location of where these chips are going. I don't know how that would happen, okay, but somehow they feel like the U.S. or, you know, again, we somehow NVIDIA, we could track these, you know, the location of these chips and where they're going. And then their own manufacturers, right, they're saying they're the ones that are relying on, they don't, this is what we talked about yesterday. If you sell these chips into China, then you take away their ability, right, to grow their own chip manufacturers, right? So again, if you sell them, then there's not as much incentive for the Chinese companies to build the big plants, you know, do the R&D, do all the things that it requires to get, you know, Blackwell level chips, top level chips in place. So President Trump came out and said yesterday, and this is kind of a slap in the face, Frankie. I think he's toying with them because he said, well, we'll sell you chips. We'll sell you even better than the H20s. Blackwell would be the top of the line. H20s would be kind of the bottom of the line because they're older technology but still effective for this AI data race. He said, we'll sell you above H20s, but we're going to dial them down a little bit. They're not going to quite be as good as the things we're using. So it's kind of a slap in the face, right? It's like, who's going to do that, right? If you're China and you're trying to win this AI race and you're trying to say, we're going to be the next economic power of the world, are you really going to accept that kind of a statement out of President Trump? Say, oh yeah, we'll take as many of those chips as we can get. They're going to say, no. Right, it's a slap in the face, don't you think, Frankie's toying with them?
Yeah, 100%. And just the fact that, you know, China does, with the industries that they do, are allowed to import into America, they make the best of the best usually. It's not a knock on America, just like, you know, the drone sector. There's not an American brand that makes drones to anything even close to what a DJI would do or anything in China. They send us the best, and they expect the best sent to them. You know what I mean? I get it. I get that. And especially the security factor, we have those concerns for them. I do understand why they would have concerns with us. We have concerns with Palantir. We have concerns with our own government. We have concerns with China. Arguably, they're trying to mimic China and their surveillance state, America, and China knows that. And they're probably like, yeah, let's look under the hood, make sure nothing's going on here. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And so, again, two big keys, location tracking, right? And their own manufacturers are the ones that are They don't want them relying on outside. They would rather build it internally. Okay, so it's funny how this has turned on them. And this makes it pretty clear, I think, as well, Frankie, that our own politicians were selling out. You know, how did China get access to? So if we think the tables have turned, what we have to assume right out of the gate is that how did those tables get turned in the first place, right? Where China was selling this stuff into the U.S. And you have to take that back to our politicians were probably selling us out, right? And letting this technology slide. Our own corporate leaders were selling us out, right? Letting this technology slide to China. Our own intelligence agencies were selling us out and letting this stuff go to China. Okay, so those are the things President Trump is after. The politicians, let's hope, right? The corporate leaders, let's hope, right? And the intelligence agencies, let's hope, because you really have to look at those three if you're really going to turn those tables back and put the U.S. in a dominant position where our technology is not being stolen, right? And again, we innovate pretty quickly so we can recover from this. I don't think China has the ability to innovate quite as quickly yet. Maybe someday they would if they got this AI, you know, revolution underway and they got, that's how they can leapfrog us, right, Frankie? If they could leapfrog us with this AI, that's the big concern, I think, here.
100%. Wow, look at you, look at that. Right on time.
All right. Sounds good. Let me get over to this, and we will hand it over to Jeremy Harrell with Rise Up. Yep, somehow it's not going there. Okay, so have a blessed day, everyone. We'll come back tomorrow to do energy, and we're going to get to this private equity and this housing stuff for sure. We thought we were going to get to it today, but it didn't happen. Have a blessed day, everyone. Jeremy Harrell with Rise Up. LFA lineup runs till 11 p.m. now, so it's a full day of great content.
Let's go.
Check it out.